The Golden Age of Radio is on the air. Morehead State Public Radio presents classic old-time radio programs from radio's golden age, the 1930s through the 1950s. On this program of the Golden Age of Radio, there's a red light bandit on an episode of Dragnet, the Batman Mystery Club in the Monster of Dumfries Hall, and we'll also hear Cedric Adams' Easy Five. Stay tuned for the Golden Age of Radio after today's news from NPR on WMKY at 90.3 FM. Welcome back to the Golden Age of Radio on WMKY at 90.3 FM. Later on today's show, Cedric Adams' Easy Five and the Monster of Dumfries Hall on the Batman Mystery Club. Right now, Jack Webb stars as Sergeant Joe Friday with the Red Light Bandit on this episode of Dragnet as WMKY presents the Golden Age of Radio.
Only the names have been changed to protect the innocent.
NBC brings you Dragnet.
You're a detective sergeant. You're assigned to robbery detail. A ruthless fiend roams the streets of your city masquerading as a police officer. For months, helpless citizens have been robbed, beaten senseless, and kidnapped. The criminal is a twisted genius, vicious, cunning. Your job is to get him.
Dragnet, the documented drama of an actual crime, investigated and solved by the men who unrelentingly stand watch on the security of your home, your family, and your life. For the next 30 minutes, in cooperation with the Los Angeles Police Department, you will travel step by step on the side of the law through an actual case from official police files, from beginning to end, from crime to punishment. Dragnet is the story of your police force in action.
It was Wednesday, June 4th. It was warm in Los Angeles. We were working the night watch out of robbery detail. My partner's Ben Romero. The boss is Ed Backstrand, chief of detectives. My name's Friday. I was on my way back from communications, and it was 11:13 p.m. when I got to room 27A. Robbery detail.
Oh, hi, Joe.
Hi, Ben. Did you get that message to call home?
Yeah, bad news.
What's the matter?
That doggone kid of mine, chicken pox.
Oh, again?
Last year it was the mumps. Year before that, the measles. Every time I get set for a vacation, he decides to catch something.
Well, forget it, Ben. Think what a comfort he's going to be in your old age.
Go ahead, laugh. You'll find out.
Yeah.
How are you, Friday? Romero?
Fine. What can we do for you?
You don't look like you remember me.
Oh, no, wait a minute. Name's Savage, isn't it? George?
It's Johnny, Sergeant. Johnny Savage. You remember now?
Oh, sure. Those liquor store robberies out in the Wilshire District. About 6-7 years ago, wasn't it?
10 years, Romero. You ought to remember that. You were at the trial.
We testify in court every week. 10 years is a long time.
It's longer in the state pen. It's a lot longer.
Yeah, you cried a little at that trial, didn't you, Savage? You said we beat that confession out of you.
Yeah, that's why I figured I'd drop in for a little visit. Kind of apologize to you fellas. You gave me a square deal. I guess I kind of lost my head. I figured I'd apologize.
Oh, that's all right, Savage. When'd you get out?
A couple of weeks ago. I did it the hard way. Served 10 flat. I don't own my day.
You find a job yet?
Yeah, Friday. I'm working nights.
What kind of a job?
Laborer in a warehouse, south end of town.
Good. You decided to level?
10 years in prison's a long time. You learn a lot of things. Nights are long, you think a lot. You get things straightened out.
I hope you mean that.
Sure I mean it, Friday. I've got everything straightened out. I know who my friends are, and I know who to watch out for.
You sound like maybe you're on the right track.
I got it figured, Romero. And like you two fellas, you caught me red-handed, and you sent me up for 10 years.
Well, you did all right, Savage. 5 armed robberies. You got off pretty easy.
You got a break, Savage. Make the best of it.
Sure, I'm not kicking. 10 years, a real break.
That's right.
Well, just dropped in for a little visit. Maybe I'll see you fellas sometime.
All right, Savage. Keep your nose clean?
Sure. No hard feelings.
No?
You just took 10 years of my life, that's all.
There's no such thing as a man going through prison without changing. And Ben and I have seen him switch in both directions. Some men learn their lesson after they land behind bars, and when they're released, they turn into good citizens. Johnny Savage was sour. We made a mental note to check him out later on, and then we went down to the record bureau and pulled his coming out mug. That's about all we had time for, because about an hour later, we started to get busy.
Hot shot, Joe. Grab it.
On the corner of Selma and Naples, the drugstore, 211, and probable attack. On the corner of Selma and Naples, 211, and...
What you got, Joe?
Selma and Naples, 211, and attack. Come on.
Here we are, Joe. Over there on the far corner.
Yeah.
All right.
Come on. We got the story from the victim, the store owner, Mr. Thomas. For the most part, it was the usual rundown of an early morning holdup. There was only one exception.
Oh, I've had young hoodlums try to hold me up before, but there was nothing like this one.
How you mean, Mr. Thomas?
Well, he came in here just before closing, and ordinarily I'd have kept an eye out because that's the time to look for him. But this fella came to the door and said he was a policeman, so I let him in. He looked like a cop. Barged right up to me and the wife behind the counter and pointed a gun. And she screamed, and he hit her in the face with the butt of the gun. Sergeant, it was horrible, remember?
That's the way it started, and that's the way it kept going. Because most of the victims and most people don't realize that as a citizen, they have the right to check on police officers' identification when in doubt. After we got the story from Mr. Thomas and checked the store in the neighborhood, Ben and I headed back for the office.
Attention, all units. At the end of North Baxter Road near Hillcrest, victim of 211 and slugging. Car 7172, take the call, code 3. Attention, all
units. That's 4 blocks away from the last one. Let's roll on it, huh, Ben?
Right, I'll hit the siren. You get the light.
By the time Ben and I got up to the end of North Baxter, the men from car 71 were already there. The victim was telling his story. His face looked like it had been through a meat grinder.
Now, we're just shifting the car into second to make the hill when I hear this siren behind me, and I see this red light flashing in the side view mirror. Well, naturally, I pulled over to the curb and... I was just reaching for my driver's license when the cop runs up, yanks me out of the car and starts clubbing me in the face with the butt of his gun.
Did you get a look at him? Think you can describe him?
No, I'm afraid not. He swung me around and kept me staring into that red light on his car all the time he was beating me. After a while, everything just went black. When I woke up, my wallet was gone, all my money's...
45 minutes later, Ben and I were interviewing the third victim, a young housewife out in the Wilshire District. Same trademark.
I tried to tell him, I didn't have any money, but he wouldn't listen. He kept holding me by the throat, beating me with his fist like he enjoyed it. Beating me.
Yeah, all right, Mrs. Jameson. Could you tell us how he got in the house?
He came in the front door and rang the bell. I opened the door, but I left the burglar chain on. He said he was a policeman. So when he demanded I open the door all the way, I did. Then he grabbed me.
And you can't describe the man for us, Miss Jameson?
He was tall, and he had dark hair and big hands. It was like a nightmare. A horrible nightmare.
Tall, dark hair, big hands. Your guess the same as mine, Joe?
Maybe. Let's wait and see. Come on, let's check with the boss.
Hi, Mike.
Hi. He's waiting for you. In there.
Come on, Ben.
Chief of Detective's Office. Hannon.
Sit down.
Yeah, Skipper.
All right, you two, let's have it.
The guy with the red light?
Yes, the guy with the red light posing as a policeman. Why hasn't he been picked up?
You know as much about it as we do, Ed. We got our first call around midnight. He knocked over a drugstore out on Selma. He hasn't stopped working since.
Didn't you get any definite lead on him? No description, no license number?
Nothing. He's tall, big hands, dark hair, that's all.
Fine. Either of you got any ideas?
Could be anybody, Skipper, with that description.
You're sure it wasn't anybody on the force?
We sent all the victims down to personnel. Lowry showed him the mug book of all police officers. Wasn't one of our men.
Works fast. Drugstore, motorist, a pedestrian, a housewife out in the Wilshire District. Went right in the house after her. Four of them, right in a row.
Five.
Huh?
There's a 20-year-old kid in the next room. Came in just before you got here. A couple of hours ago, he was sitting in a car with his girl up in Mulholland Drive. This red light bandit comes along, slugs him, and kidnaps the girl.
Kidnaps? She still miss?
Not a trace.
When did this happen?
A couple of hours ago. They brought the kid over from Georgia Street Hospital. We can talk to him now. He's had a bad time. Right in here.
Okay.
Pete, we're going to have to ask you a few more questions.
Oh, yeah. Okay. It feels a little better now.
This is Sergeant Friday and Sergeant Romero.
Hi, Pete.
Hi.
Can you tell us what time the trouble started?
Oh, about 10:30. Sally and I were sitting in the car talking about where we were going on our honeymoon. We're going to be married next month. And then this car pulls up behind us and starts flashing a red spotlight on us, and a guy runs over and pulls open the door. He said he was a cop.
Did you get a good look at his car, Pete?
I think it was a black sedan.
Did you get a look at the man, Pete?
No. No, I didn't. It was pretty dark, and he kept me staring into that red spotlight. It all happened so fast. Then he started slugging me, and I went down.
What happened then?
Well, the next thing I knew, Sally was screaming. He had one hand on her throat, and he had her backed up against the side of the car. He was beating her with the other hand. Some kind of a short billy club. Well, I got up, and I started for him, and he slugged me again. When I came to, Sally was gone.
Anybody check the area up there, Ed?
Yeah, Davis and Griffin. Didn't find a thing.
Oh, Sergeant, you gotta find her. You got to. I wouldn't know what to tell her folks. I wouldn't know what to say.
That's all right, Pete. We'll find her. You take it easy.
Got a hot shot, Ed, up in Summit Road near Westmore. A woman, unconscious. Ambulance follow-up. Possible dead body.
All right, Hannon. Look after Pete here. Friday, Romero, let's go. Up ahead, Romero, to the right.
Okay, Skipper.
Yeah, there's the ambulance and the cruiser car.
You're a lonely-looking spot.
All right, come on.
Hiya, Doc. What'd you find?
Hiya, fellas. Right over here. Just gonna take her in.
Where'd you find her?
Over there, by the side of the road. Somebody driving by saw her. They called us.
Any identification?
This bracelet on her wrist.
To my dearest Sally and Pete. December 25th, 1947.
That's a girl, all right. What are the chances, Doc?
I wouldn't bet on them. Pretty bad shape. Well, have you seen enough?
Yeah. Friday, Romero, call the crime lab and check the area for footprints and tire tracks. I'll ride back in the ambulance with the girl. If she regains consciousness, I want to talk to her. All right?
Okay, Ed.
I'll meet you in the office by 8:30. We're working straight through till we get this guy.
See you at the office, Giver.
What time you got, Ben?
4:07. Long night.
Hey, that car up there ahead. Let's take a look at it, huh?
Black sedan. Hey, look, he's flashing a red spot on that convertible.
Come on.
He sees us, Joe. He's pulling away.
Get that gas pedal down to the floor.
Already there. He's turning off right.
Hit the siren. I'll get the light. We're gaining a little, Ben. Next corner to the left.
Joe, where'd he go?
The fancy driver. Try the alley up ahead to the left here.
Must have turned up that cross street.
Get through the alley and double back on him.
Right.
There he is, Ben. Look out.
Watch it, Joe. Watch it. He's going to ram us.
We got hit just in front of the rear bumper. Our car was forced into the curbing and it turned over. He was real lucky. He kept right on going. But this time, Ben and I were sharing the luck. All we got out of it was a couple of nasty cracks in the head and a few bruises, but it was enough to keep us in a hospital under observation for a day. By this time, Ed Backstrand was fuming. So were the newspapers. During the day we spent in the hospital, the red light bandit went on a real blitz. He pulled 6 more jobs, 1 liquor store, 2 residential holdups, and 3 car robberies. 5 of the 6 victims were slugged and beaten. Davis and Griffin had taken over for Ben and me, and by the time we got back on the job, they'd built up a lead for us.
We've been working with Wilkerson up in auto theft, Joe. He's used 4 stolen cars already. We got the makes and numbers on each one of them.
How about the dark sedan he was driving when he rammed us?
The boys picked it up this morning out on Sepulveda. We're checking it for prints now.
Oh, that's fine, Dave. You got any description on the guy yet?
No luck there, Joe. He works too fast.
Nothing at all?
The same as you had. Tall, black hair, big hands. Loves to use them.
Friday, Romero, got a minute?
Okay, Skipper. Check you later, honey.
Sure thing, boys. Sit down. How do you feel?
Pretty fair, Ed.
A little stiff here and there.
All right, did Davis fill you in?
Up to date.
Okay, I just called the doctor who's handling Sally Wilder, Pete's girlfriend, you remember?
Oh, yeah.
She's been in pretty bad shape since we found her up there on Summit Road. This morning she took a turn for the better. She's conscious, and her doctor thinks she might be able to talk to us a little bit.
Good. When?
About an hour. I cleared it with the doctor and with her family. You'll only be able to stay a couple of minutes, so make the most of them. That's all.
All right, Ed. We'll check with you later.
Say, Joe, Ben, here's some mail came for you fellas while you were gone.
Oh, thank you, Mike. We're going over to the county hospital. We ought to be back in a couple hours.
Okay. Say, there's been a couple of phone calls, too.
Yeah, anything important?
I don't think so. The guy just called to say hello. Said his name was Johnny Savage. He just called to say hello.
I presume you men are aware of the girl's critical condition.
Yeah, that's right, Dr. Froman.
We saw her before she was taken here at the hospital.
Yes. You understand, of course, that you'll be able to see her for only a few minutes, and please try your best not to excite her, huh?
Right, Doctor.
Sally isn't able to talk. Bad mouth and face injuries, so your questions will have to be answered simply yes or no and nod of the head.
Okay, we got you. We only have a few questions, and we want to know if she can identify the man who beat her from these pictures we've got here.
All right, Sergeant. This way, please.
Thank you.
Sally, these gentlemen are from the police department. They'd like to ask you a few questions. Now, there's no need to be nervous or afraid. Just simply nod your head yes or no. Now, that's fine. All right, Sergeant.
Sally, did you see the man who attacked you?
Yes. She says yes.
Did you get a good look at his face? You did. All right, Sally, now you can answer these 3 together. Just yes or no. Was he tall? Did he have dark hair? Did he have large hands? He did. Ben.
All right, yeah, Jim.
Hand me the folder.
Here you are. Here you are.
Thanks. Now, there's just one more thing, Sally. I'm going to show you some pictures. Now, take all the time you want before you make up your mind about each one. If you recognize any one of these men as the person who attacked you, just nod your head, all right? All right, it's fine. Now, good. Here's the first one. No? All right, here's the next one. No. Now, how about this one? No? All right, here's another. Do you recognize him? This was the man? Are you sure, Sally? Thank you. That's all. Let's go.
Did you find what you wanted, Sergeant?
Yes, Doctor, we did. Here, it's this one.
Nice-looking chap. Who is he, Sergeant?
His name's Savage, Dr. Froman. Johnny Savage. When we got back to the office, we checked in with Ed Backstrand. In 5 minutes, an all-points bulletin and a full description of the suspect was broadcast to every radio car, every motorcycle officer, to every sheriff and law enforcement agency in Los Angeles and Southern California. By nightfall, the manhunt was on. More than a dozen extra patrol units were called in for duty that night, and when they pulled out of the police garage, the name, the picture, and the full description of Johnny Savage was in the possession of every officer. The same for the patrolmen. Whether they walked a beat downtown or out in the residential areas, the picture of Johnny Savage went with them. Everything was done that could be done. On the second night of the manhunt, far out on the edge of town, Johnny Savage, the red light bandit, got his 12th victim, a 63-year-old storekeeper.
Attention, all units. 939 Markham Street, near Clark, 211 and Slugging, code 3, ambulance dispatched. All units, 939 Markham Street, near Clark.
Here it is, Skipper. Tie-in.
What'd you get?
Wilkerson lifted the prints off that black sedan that rammed Joe and me.
Yeah?
They belong to Johnny Savage.
Yeah, good.
That storekeeper last night. It is Savage, all right. Victim identified him from his mug.
All right. We got enough in this Savage guy to put him on ice for life. All we have to do now is to get him.
Now, look, the way we figure it, Ed, this red light bandit is using stolen cars with cold plates, so there's no way of tracking down the cars at regular commercial garages. He's got to be running private garages someplace around town.
All right, let's get the neighborhood patrolman on the job. Advertise it. All over town. It's a city ordinance, isn't it? People who rent private garages are bound by law to register the car and license number with the police. Start a campaign if you want, but find those cars.
Right.
Yeah, wait a minute. Hello, Backstrand. Yeah? When? I see. Yeah, thanks.
What is it, Ed?
It was the hospital. About the girl, Sally.
Sally Wilder? What about her?
She died 5 minutes ago.
That night, everybody went back on the job as usual. The cruiser cars, the patrolmen, the motorcycle officers, and about a dozen decoy cars. Armed police women riding alone in cars or parked in lonely spots with a police officer escort. Our car, 80K, was still in the garage for repairs, so they assigned us another one. And we started to make the rounds. Everything was usual, except one thing. We weren't tracking down just a thief anymore or a sadist who liked to beat people's faces in. We were out to get a murderer. It was a perfect night for the suspect. Dark, no moon. I gave Ben 2-1 odds, and I put up $5 that we'd get Savage that night. I lost the $5. We cruised until 7 the next morning, but there wasn't even a nibble. We had breakfast at the Federal Cafe, a little restaurant down the street from the City Hall, and it was about 8:15 when we got back to the office. We were pretty tired.
Robert Detail, Romero.
I would like to speak to Sergeant Friday.
Just a minute. It's for you, Joe.
Okay, thanks. Friday talking.
Sergeant Friday, I want to talk to you.
Well, I'm listening. Go ahead.
I mean, I want to talk to you in person as soon as possible.
Can't you tell me over the phone? What is it?
I cannot tell you over the phone. It is very important. Can you come now?
Well, now, look, mister, I'm awful sorry, but we're very busy down...
554 Ramona Avenue. Can you come now?
Well, what's this all about? Who is this speaking?
My name is Carl Savage. My son's name is John.
Here it is, Joe. Neat looking little place.
Yeah.
Yeah?
I'm Sergeant Friday. You Mr. Savage?
Yeah, come in.
Okay. This is my partner, Sergeant Romero.
How do you do? I will be brief, gentlemen. I am the father of John Savage. I wish for you to catch him. I will help you.
I noticed the name on the mailbox outside, Mr. Savage. Changed your name lately?
I changed my name 10 years ago when John first got into trouble. My own name I had to change, the shame. Always from him, my son, shame.
Mr. Savage, has your son been home since he got out of prison?
Yeah, many times, to ask for money. I would not give him any, so he struck me. Last night, I read in the newspaper the little girl he beat up. She is dead. Then I make up my mind.
Do you know where your son is now, Mr. Savage?
Not now, no. But our garage has a car in there. It is not his, I know. Also in the garage, I find many license plates. I find spotlights with red glass lens.
But you don't have any idea where we could find
him. No, but he will come back. He always comes back for money.
We're going to station an officer here in the house, Mr. Savage.
Anything you want, if it will catch him. He's bad, Sergeant. Like something poison. All true, he's bad.
See a sewing basket over him, Mr. Savage. The wife live here with you?
10 days ago, before this starts, I bury Gertrude. My wife, his mother. Sergeant, for 10 years she is sick, but for 10 years she stays alive to see him from prison. 10 days ago, she died. He did not even come to the funeral.
Does your son have any idea that you might call us?
No, I don't think so. But when you catch him, give me a gun. With my own two hands, I will kill him, Johnny Savage.
Before we left, we called Ed Backstrand and we brought him up to date. He sent 3 detectives out to relieve us, Davis, Griffin, and Marsh. We told them to keep an eye on the house and the stolen car in the garage. That night after dinner, Ed Backstrand, Ben, and I went out and relieved them. We parked the cruiser car in the garage next door, and then we took up our posts. Carl Savage had a light supper, and then he went to bed about 9. The 3 of us sat at the front windows in the darkened house, and we waited. Ben kept his eye on the garage. Outside, across the city, the manhunt continued as usual. 3 hours went by. The waiting got monotonous.
Friday, Romero, look alive, will you?
Oh, yes, Skipper, I'm sorry.
That clock's enough to put anybody to sleep.
What time you got?
12:23 a.m.
Thanks.
The clock kept ticking. We were tired. We took turns keeping each other awake. At 2:10, I looked at my watch, and then I settled back and tried to find some kind of a comfortable position. They started so faintly, it was just like the ticking of the clock. Same rhythm. And then they came closer, and the sounds got out of rhythm. Backstrand's head came up with a snap.
Freddy, Romero, you hear that?
Yeah, Ed.
Get up to the window, watch the curtains. You see anything?
Yeah. Yeah, somebody's coming.
Savage?
Can't tell. Wait a minute, he's slowing down. He's going up the driveway to the garage. He's going inside. That's him.
Come on. Watch it, he spotted us. He went over that fence into the yard.
There he is, Friday.
You hit him, Joe.
Maybe.
He's going for the street.
He's headed for that car, Ed, that sedan up on the corner there.
Yeah, Romero, go back and get the car.
Right, Skipper.
He must have parked up the block before he came around. Where's Romero?
I don't know. Oh, here he comes now. All right, let's go.
Get that radio on, Joe.
It's already on, Ed.
All right, give him a call. Any sign yet?
No, nothing so far. Next corner to the right, Ben. Unit 80K to Control 4. 80K to Control 4.
Control 4 to Unit 80K. Go ahead.
Clear and keep Frequency 4 open. This is an emergency.
80K, roger. Frequency 4, open and clear. Attention, all units on Frequency 4. Stand by. 80K, go ahead.
Yeah, there he is, Friday, up ahead. Dark blue sedan.
Control 4, we are in pursuit of the possible red light bandit. Suspect is driving a dark blue 1949 sedan. License number in the 7 column. 6-1 Robert 784. Use caution. Suspect is armed. Code 3.
Attention, all units. Attention, all units. Unit 80K now pursuing possible red light bandit. Suspect is driving a dark blue 1949 sedan. License number in the 7 column. 6-1 Robert 784. Use caution. Suspect is armed. Code 3. Your location, 80K.
Control 4. We are headed east on Wilshire Boulevard, crossing La Brea.
Attention, all units.
Watch it, Romero. Don't lose him.
I see him, Skipper.
Control 4, still pursuing red light bandit. Headed east on Wilshire, now crossing Rossmore.
Attention, all units. Suspect is still headed east on Wilshire, now crossing Rossmore. Suspect is armed. Use caution. Code 3.
That truck pulling out up ahead.
Hit the siren, will you, Skipper?
Yeah.
All right, hold on. It's a tight squeeze.
Keeping on, Romero. A lot of traffic up ahead. He's got to slow down.
Control 4. Suspect headed east on Wilshire, crossing Western Avenue, closing in.
There he goes. Took a right down Sherman Alley. It's a dead end.
Yeah. Control 4. Suspect turns south into Sherman Alley, closing in on suspect.
Attention, all units. Suspect has turned south into Sherman Alley. Suspect is trapped. Converge on Sherman Alley.
There he is, Skipper. Pulling up ahead. He's jumping out.
All right, take the mic, will you, Ed? Here. Come on, Ben.
I'll direct the other cars in. If you need help, holler.
Right, Skipper.
All right, which way to go, Ben?
Down between those buildings.
Come on.
He's starting up the back fire escape.
All right, keep him busy. All right, Savage, come on down.
He wants to go the rough way.
One more chance, Savage. Come on down.
No use, Joe. He's heading up for the roof.
Come on. He climbs like a monkey. Come on, let's get him.
Yeah,
all
right.
Here, I'll give you a hand.
Here's the roof. All right, where'd he go?
I don't know. Let's spread out. All right, Savage, you're through. Throw your gun out. Come out with your hands up.
Watch it, Joe. He's running for the edge. He's going to jump.
I'll get him. All right, up. Guy back here.
You lousy copper. You dirty, lousy copper. I'll kill you. I'll
You're
kill...
through, Savage. You're through.
Good, Joe.
Yeah. Throw the cuffs on, will you?
Yeah, you just betcha. You want a smoke?
Yeah, I can sure use one. Thanks.
Quiet up here.
Yeah. I was just thinking.
Well?
Carl Savage, this guy's father.
Mm-hmm. What about him?
Nothing. What would you do, Ben, if your son was a murderer?
The story you have just heard is true. Only the names were changed to protect the innocent. John Savage was tried and convicted of murder in the first degree. He was executed in the lethal gas chamber at the state penitentiary. You have just heard the sixth in a new series of authentic cases from official files. Technical advice for Dragnet is furnished by the Los Angeles Police Department.
Tonight's program is dedicated to Patrol Officer Robert Steele of the Montana State Highway Patrol, who on the morning of November 2nd, 1947, gave his life so that yours might be more secure.
Dragnet came to you from Los Angeles. This is NBC, the national broadcasting company.
You're listening to the Golden Age of Radio on WMKY with an episode of Dragnet starring Jack Webb as Sergeant Joe Friday. Stay tuned for more classic old-time radio from the 1930s through the 1950s. When the Golden Age of Radio continues on Morehead State Public Radio, WMKY at 90.3 FM. Welcome back to the Golden Age of Radio on WMKY at 90.3 FM. In a moment, Cedric Adams' Easy Five. But first, it's the Batman Mystery Club in the Monster of Dumfries Hall on the Golden Age of Radio.
By virtue of the authority vested in me, I do hereby call to order the 103rd meeting of the Batman Mystery Club. And now it is my privilege to introduce our friend Bruce Wayne, otherwise known as the Batman.
Thank you, Robin. Good evening, everybody. You've just heard Robin open the 103rd meeting of our mystery club. As you know, we gather together at this time each night to explore the supernatural and to tear aside the veil of darkness, to prove that ghosts and apparitions are only figments of man's imagination, to show that wherever there is mystery, it's been created by human hands. And so, with that thought in mind, I bid you all welcome to the mystery club. Since we have important matters to consider tonight, I move that we dispense with the reading of the minutes of the last meeting.
I second the motion, Batman.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion is carried. Are there any questions from the floor? Yes, Richard.
I'm a little puzzled about something, Batman.
All right, let's see whether we can unpuzzle you. What is it, Richard?
Well, in our last mystery, you know, the one we finished Friday night, You told how the little man with the limp, I think his name was Mr. Willis.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he swore that he saw the ghost of his brother when he visited that medium, Madame Tafara. Well, he wasn't crazy, was he?
Oh, Mr. Willis was quite sane. As a matter of fact, he was convinced he had seen his brother's ghost.
Well, did he?
Of course not. Madame Zafara, like most fakers, was very clever. Before setting up the seance for Mr. Willis, she managed somehow to secure a photograph of his dead brother. She had a plaster cast made, and using soft green lights, it almost looked like the real thing.
Gee whiz. Yeah, but what about the ectoplasm Mr. Willis saw? Wasn't that real?
Our ectoplasm doesn't exist, Richard. It's a word used by so-called psychic mediums as part of their phony mumbo-jumbo. It's supposed to be a ghostly emanation. In Mr. Willis's case, what he saw floating around the half-darkened room was a thin piece of white gauze suspended from a string. In his excited state, it looked like a ghostly emanation.
Oh, well, I think that clears it up. Thanks.
You're quite welcome, Richard. Now, if there are no further questions, we'll proceed to our story.
It's a new one tonight, isn't it, Batman?
Yes, Marilyn, a brand new one.
A ghost story?
Well, I suppose you'd call it that, Roger. It's about the monster of Dumfries Hall. All right, now, turn the lights low, Robin. That's better. Now, the story begins 3 years ago when Robin and I were in England. We'd been invited to dinner at Dumfries Hall, an old English country manor, the home of my friend Sir Alfred Dumfries. It was a wild and lonely night, with a storm brewing. And the fact that Dumfries Hall was located in the center of a barren moor didn't help matters any. There were five of us at the dinner table. Sir Alfred, charming Lady Marsden, gruff old Sir Sidney Mordred, Robin, and myself. We had just finished dessert and were engaged in conversation.
More coffee, Mr. Wayne.
Thank you, no, Lady Marsden.
Well, you may pour me another cup, by Joe.
Of course, Sir Mordred.
Oh, beastly weather. A beastly hole to be having it in, I must say. If I'd known the weather was going to be as rotten as this, I'd have stayed in London, I declare. How are you standing it, Wayne?
Oh, it isn't the weather I mind, Sir Mordred. It's the fact that it seems to make this old baronial mansion so chill and damp. A wood-burning fireplace is decorative, but I'd prefer steam radiators myself. You were about to say something, Sir Alfred?
I was about to say that Sir Mordred, since he has far more money than I, can have those improvements put in after he buys Dumfries Hall. Buy Dumfries Hall? Oh, I say, do you still expect me to buy this ruddy place, Alfred? You said you would if I proved it wasn't haunted.
Haunted? Gosh, is Dumfries Hall haunted, Sir Alfred?
Of course not, Robin. It's just that a silly legend has grown up about the place. A legend concerning a monster. Now, look, Alf, let's face facts, what? I need a country estate, and I'm willing to buy this place if you can assure me the death chamber is not haunted. And by Joe, you know there's only one way to prove that. That's exactly how I plan to prove it.
Alfred, you don't really mean
that. I most certainly do, Lady Marsden.
Oh, but you can't. Anyone who spent even 5 minutes in that room after midnight...
Listen to me, all of you. There's not one of you at this table who is not aware of the fact that I'm a poor man. Yes, a poor man. Oh, I have lands, estates, but they cost me money. They don't make me money. I've got to sell this place, and Sir Mordred says he'll buy it if I can prove Dumfries Hall is not haunted. Well, I intend to prove it tonight.
Whatever.
Oh, nothing to alarm yourself about, Lady Marsden. There are wild dogs on the moor. Sometimes they bay and howl.
Yes, yes, of course. Silly of me to be so nervous.
Well, as I was saying, I shall enter the death chamber at midnight and remain there until morning. I shall prove that the legend has no foundation in fact.
If you don't mind telling me, Sir Alfred, what exactly is the legend of this death chamber? I have only the vaguest idea.
Of course I'll tell you, Bruce. There's a room in this house which has not been unlocked for over a century. No one has entered it in all that time. Why? Because the last three people who slept in it died. Died under rather mysterious circumstances. They were found stiffened by death into, shall we say, unpleasant shape.
And you propose to enter that room tonight? Alone?
I do.
If these people died, as you say
they did. I don't say they did. The legend says it. Oh, I don't deny people have died in that room, but I am convinced they died natural deaths. The rest is distortion, old wives' tales. that have become more distorted with each telling.
But, Sir Alfred, what of the monster?
Oh, more of the same legend, Bruce. It's said that several of the people who died screamed out something about a monster. What exactly, no one ever knew. It is also said that a strange being has been seen prowling the corridors of Dumfries Hall. Well, I don't believe a word of it. I shall prove tonight that the hall is not haunted.
By Joe, Elf, you prove it, and I'll buy Dumfries at your own figure.
I'll prove it. At midnight, I'll enter the so-called death chamber. We'll unlock the door together. I'll go in, and the rest of you can wait outside. And you may be sure I'll come out alive.
Midnight, Sir Alfred.
Yes, I wish you'd stop standing there and staring at me some more. It is as though you were seeing me for the last time. Nothing's going to happen, I assure you. I'm merely going to explode a silly and stupid legend.
Oh, look here, Alf. I'll buy the blooming place. Now, you needn't prove it's not haunted. I'll either keep the death chamber locked or call in a firm of London chappies and have the ghosts exterminated.
That's rightly extorting of you, Sir Mordred, but I can't let you do it. Now, look here, everything's ready, so don't try to stop me. Here's the death chamber before us. Here in my hand is the ancient key to it. By George, they made them large enough in those days, didn't they? Yes, and the wild dogs are supplying just the right ghostly atmosphere.
Oh, gosh, Sir Alfred, I am scared. I hate to see you going into that room alone like
that. Don't fret your young head about me, Robin.
Sir Alfred's quite right, Robin. He's just trying to prove what we've been proving for a long time, that ghosts do not exist except in the imagination.
Yes, of course. That's perfectly silly, that whole matter.
Oh, stop looking so glum, Mordred. This is a lark. I'll tell you what we'll do. I keep talking to you from inside the room. So long as you hear my voice, you'll know there's nothing wrong. Let's open the ruddy room. I'll just insert the key. So. Turn it. So. Turns easily enough, eh? Now then, I'll just open the door. Now, if you'll just hand me that lighted candle, I'll go in.
Well, Fred, by Joe, are you sure?
Oh, come now, not another word, Mordred. Candle. Thanks. Well, here I go. Wish me luck.
Good luck, old boy. I don't know why, but I have a feeling I could use a stimulant.
Nonsense, Sir Mordred. And anyway, we must all of us stay here now.
Yes, and keep talking to Sir Alfred. Sir Alfred, everything all right?
Top hole, Bruce. Rather a musty old place, to say the least. Hardly enough air in here to keep the candle burning. But quite safe. Don't worry.
Gee, sir, is he going to stay in there all night?
Oh, no, lady. If he remains in there half an hour, it'll be enough. According to the legend, death always occurred between midnight and the half hour following. I say, Alf, quite comfortable, are you?
Oh, yes, quite. I'm enjoying it, as a matter of fact. Bring on your monster.
It really sounds as if he is enjoying it.
Why shouldn't he? As he said, it's nothing but a lark.
Oh, that dog again. Every time it howls, my blood runs cold. Oh, by Joe, Alf, after I've bought this place, the first thing I'm going to do is clear the moor of those blasted dogs. You care to take on the job yourself? You're a good shot. I say, Alf, would you care to take on the job yourself?
Oh, he doesn't answer.
No. No, it can't be.
Just a moment. Sir Alfred, this is Bruce Wayne. Sir Alfred.
Not a sound.
Don't move anyone. Going in there.
No, Mr. Wayne, you mustn't.
Don't move, I said. Sir Alfred!
Mr. Wayne, what is it? What's happened?
Stay where you are.
Sir Wayne, tell me what's happened.
I can't tell you.
Please let me go to him. I must go to him.
No, you mustn't go to him. No one can enter that room. All right, Robin. Turn up the lights.
Oh, what happened in the death chamber, Batman?
I'm afraid we haven't time to go into that tonight, Jerry.
But what about
to go.
Well, how many times does Batman have to tell you there are no ghosts?
Now, don't lose your temper, Robin. After all, Marilyn is a new member of the club. Be patient with her. All I can tell you, Marilyn, is this. No one else could have entered that room that night but Sir Alfred. There was only one door, and there were no windows. And yet, it certainly looked as if someone or something had slipped in.
But who?
Well, perhaps we'll find out at tomorrow's meeting of the Mystery Club. And now, since time is short, I'll accept a motion to adjourn.
Well, I move that we adjourn.
Second the motion.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion is carried. Close the meeting, Robin.
By virtue of the authority vested in me, I do hereby adjourn the 103rd meeting of the Batman Mystery Club. The 104th meeting will take place tomorrow night at the same time over the same station.
Time was when the sedan chair was considered the height of luxury. When you think of all the places you go and all the things you now do by radio, a sedan chair doesn't seem like much of a luxury at all. Tuned to a radio network like the CBS Radio Network, you can, in a matter of moments, travel to foreign capitals to learn what's happening to individuals or whole nations at a time. Because a network like CBS Radio is made up of many stations, stations like the one you're listening to now, the smartest supper clubs from New York to San Francisco invite you to dance to the music of their big-name bands night after night. Because CBS Radio's vast network facilities extend in every direction, you can laugh with the funniest comedians in Hollywood or on Broadway. Then move on to a serious discussion of space-age problems, and all in the course of an evening. By all means, use that sedan chair if you have one. But if you want to go places fast, take CBS Radio along.
How'd you do? Yes, this is Cedric Adams speaking. Pull up a rocker for an easy five. Transcribed for Pillsbury Pie Crust Mix.
You know, it seems to me that mothers get smarter and smarter all the time. For instance, in the old days, when it came time to wean the baby, some mothers would switch to ordinary bottled milk. They had a time of it, too, because the baby was used to pet evaporated milk. And he had some pretty definite ways of telling Mom that he didn't like any change in diet. Well, these days, mothers don't have that trouble at weaning time. They just keep baby on pet milk, and everything's rosy. Baby likes pet milk in the bottle, he likes it in the glass. And even more important, the very same protective substances in pet evaporated milk that help babies build sound teeth, strong, straight bones, and make sturdy, steady growth helps youngsters through all their growing years. Yes, it's getting so in happy homes throughout the country. Youngsters have safe, easy-to-digest pet milk from the time they're born till they have pet milk babies of their own. Which is probably one reason why there are more happy, healthy youngsters today than ever before.
Ask any waitress, and she'll tell you that she can analyze your character by what you do with your cigarette ashes. This case was actually observed the other night in one of our better places. The woman customer was smoking through a long yellow holder. There were two ashtrays on the table. Her first flip of ashes went on the floor. The second she put on her plate, and the third found the same place. The fourth she put on the saucer, and believe it or not, she finished the smoke by taking the cigarette butt out of the holder, dunking it in her water glass, and then tossing the thing in her sherbet glass. The cigarette that's pressed out on a plate or a saucer is quite a problem, whether it's in a home or a public place, and any carpet expert will explode the theory that ashes are good for the rugs. They're not. Ashes are good for ashtrays, but ashtrays seem to be good for nothing. Well, take a look at your legs tonight in a mirror. Chances are they don't match. Your right leg is usually more developed than your left. Did you ever hear the origin of the term, he's in the limelight now? Well, before electricity, for a spotlight, they used a small cube of white chemical compound into which they shot a powerful gas, which made the lime light, hence the expression. Slice your cucumber with a little bit of the skin left on it, and you remove, of all things, the belch. If it works, it's wonderful. Zipper fasteners, strangely enough, have really been manufactured since way back in 1913. But the principal use for them in those days was on tobacco pouches. It wasn't until 1936 they became an adjunct to the cloak and suit business. Schiaparelli, the dress designer, unveiled a tweed sports suit with its pockets closed by zippers, and bing, the rest is history. The General Motors Research Laboratories have recently issued a bulletin that may make you put your car in the garage at night. Few factors, they say, are more damaging to the finish of an automobile than dew that's evaporated by sunshine. It's the rising sun hitting the dew-covered car that does the damage to the finish. For some unexplained reason, rainwater has nowhere near the ill effect on cars that dew has. And thawing frost, by the way, is just as bad as the evaporating dew. I guess it looks like it's into the garage from now on, then. Each of those automatic phonographs you see in taverns has to take in a minimum of $9 a week to make the jukebox worthwhile to the operator himself. You know, it's kind of fun to see that sunbeam smile come onto a man's face as he gets the first taste of really good homemade pie. The kind with a crust that just melts in your mouth. You know, the kind you make every time when you use chill-blended Pillsbury pie crust mix. Only Pillsbury makes the chill-blended kind, and it's the chill-blended kind that makes the wonderful difference in flakiness. You know how chilling adds tenderness and flakiness to your pie crust? Well, Pillsbury does that chilling for you. They worked out a special process for blending the flour and the shortening at low temperatures, and that chill-blended process cuts in the shortening more perfectly than is usually done at home. And you can easily test how cookbook perfect the shortening is cut in. Rub a pinch of Pillsbury pie crust mix in the palm of your hand. You'll feel the fine way that the shortening particles stay separate and evenly distributed. Then to make your pie, you just add water to the mix, blend, and roll out your dough. When you put the pie in the oven and the heat hits those tiny particles of shortening, they puff, bubble, and turn into the kind of crust every cook is proud to bake. A crust tender as a love song and flaky through and through. So get some of that chill-blended Pillsbury pie crust mix today, will you? Get several packages. We Americans undergo about 8 million surgical operations a year, with nearly one-third of them being tonsillectomies. Here's a little hint for de-fleeing your pooch. Try this. Sprinkle a half a package of dry snuff over the dog's back and then brush it thoroughly into the hide. The fleas, they tell me, drop off immediately. Try your family on this stickler. Can you give the last name of your grandmother before she was married? Well, I guess that should keep you busy over the weekend, and it winds up our 25 and 5 for Pillsbury, the greatest name in mixes. This is Cedric Adams speaking. Stay tuned now for Stars Over Hollywood, which follows immediately over most of these stations.
This is the CBS Radio Network.
The Golden Age of Radio on WMKY with an episode of Cedric Adams' Easy Five and The Monster of Dumfries Hall on the Batman Mystery Club. This has been the Golden Age of Radio, classic old-time radio programs from the 1930s through the 1950s. Material for this program provided by the Internet Archive, an online nonprofit library of books, movies, music, and old-time radio shows, on the web at archive.org. Tune in again for the Golden Age of Radio next week at this same time and channel on WMKY at 90.3 FM and online at WMKY.org.